the dying embers of human existence as the asteroid, a behemoth the size of Texas, hurtles relentlessly toward Earth. The world braces for an apocalyptic end. Deep beneath the bunker, a refuge plunges into the bowels of the Earth. Here the Chosen gather, their purpose clear, to preserve the very soul of our civilization. The 35 and 70 millimeter prints that encapsulate the magic, the emotion, and the dreams of generations past. These masterpieces, each frame a testament to the human spirit, are carefully cataloged and cradled in the cavernous confines of the bunker. Perhaps there was room for more. For friends and family yearning for salvation, but sacrifices must be made. The movie nerds stand united, the keepers of a flame, promising a future where the art of storytelling endures, transcending the boundaries of time and space. God help us all.
Welcome to Back to the Framerate, part of the Weston Media Podcast Network. Join us as we watch and discuss films on VOD and streaming platforms, deliberating on whether each is worthy of salvation or destined for destruction in the face of the impending asteroid apocalypse. I'm Nathan Schur, and accompanying me are the extraordinary movie mavens Brianna Butterworth, Ellie Escobar, and Sam Cole. And there we have it. And I was about to say, and joining... I know the thing is, the funny thing is, I rewrote my opening and I have all these grammatical errors because I wrote it to also say that joining us as a full-time host for her final episode is Ellie Escobar. So, but welcome everyone. And I'm going to pass over to Ellie in a moment, but I have kind of made a tradition. I'm trying to make it a tradition to begin every episode with a question.
I have been racking my brain. What's he going to ask?
And I want our host to settle the age-old debate that has plagued the greatest minds for centuries.
Fuck me.
Is the super sternal notch on a woman a myth? Go.
I thought it was real, but I didn't bother to Google it. I thought it was real.
Like, is it a myth on a woman, but real on a man? Is this like an Adam's rib situation?
No, I thought you said super. I thought that's an actual thing on your neck that
this
like, is a real thing. Yeah,
it's a hole.
That's definitely the answer I wanted, Ellie. Thank you,
Nathan. All I have to say to that comment is, for God's sakes, man.
I just brought the podcast down to a whole
super external notches on
reference, movie reference.
Well, you guys have the Adam's apple and we needed a hole, so what the hell?
True.
I'm just saying.
I was just saying.
I don't have an Adam's apple. I just have a burly pool of fat where my head moves around like in a soup of.
And then when you kiss, when a guy kisses the girl, the Adam's apple goes in the girl's holes. It's how it goes. Y'all know that.
Sammy, just described yourself like the Baron and Doom.
Yeah. I look at him. I'm like, hey, I didn't know I was in this movie.
Oh. Yeah, speaking of Dune, you know, I watched Dune and The English Patient on the same day.
That's a lot of sand, man.
So much sand.
Did you go home? Were there like sand in your shoes? You were like,
I felt it. I was like checking like my underwear and all the crevices everywhere. I was like,
did you check your supersternal notch? Did you find sand?
By the way, because we are a worldwide cultural podcast, I would like to point out in America, it's called Dune and the French call it Dwin.
Yeah, but actually on this podcast, it's pronounced Dune.
In Espanol, you say Dune.
Oh,
okay.
Dune. Did you like Dune, Nathan? Did you like it?
Yeah, I did. I did like Dune a lot.
Yeah. Yes. It's a good movie.
Yeah.
Big fan.
So we're not reviewing Dune today. We are watching. We did watch, and we're going to be discussing The English Patient from 1996. And I will. I have a.
You have a hot sand in your butthole when you go to the beach.
God, that sounds awful.
Really? Word. Like,
is that the sound
guys,
of it?
Hey guys, remember when I showed you the book by that author and his name was Harry Hull? I just wanted to. Yes.
We have reached a whole nother sensor level on Apple Podcasts.
A whole nother.
That's okay. I have a plot synopsis.
Love this episode.
Yeah, they will. Yes, bring your kids, everyone. Yeah. My plot synopsis
for Dune.
For Dune, yes. The sweeping expanses of the Sahara are the setting for this passionate love affair in this adaptation of Michael, I can't say his name, Ondaatje. Who's the guy that wrote this novel? Yeah, that guy. A badly burned man, Lazo de Amalje. How do you, he, it's referred to in the movie Amalje. A few times. Amalje. Thank you, Sam. Yeah. Played by Ray Fiennes. Is tended to by a nurse, Hannah, played by Juliette Binoche, in an Italian monastery near the end of World War II. His past is revealed through flashbacks involving a married English woman, played by Kristen Scott Thomas, and his work mapping the African landscape. Hannah learns to heal her own scars as she helps the dying man. However, because I love to do this, I have the version for your children as well, brought to you by ChatGTP. Once upon a time, there was a guy named Laszlo who got really, really sunburned in the desert, like a crispy potato chip. Then along came Nurse Hannah, who was like a superhero with bandages. While she patched him up, Laszlo remembered all sorts of wild adventures, like trying to impress a lady named Catherine. It's a bit like a big desert soap opera, but with fewer tears and more sunscreen.
Oh boy.
I mean, his face didn't look like a Raffles potato chip.
Yeah.
I would actually, not eat
it. It was very gooey at first, yeah, you know?
But in the.
You
know, in
since
the-
his face was done by the Jim Henson Creature Shop, I could not help but make a comparison to dying Skeksis in the Dark Crystal. But
anyway. Ooh. Honestly, I thought the makeup was great, but in the flashbacks, it's more like Ralph Fine, am I right? I mean.
Yeah, this movie is, you know, he did have that very, very significant role in Schindler's List, but this is really the movie that put him on the map. So
he does have one line in this movie where I thought he delivered it and sounded exactly like Voldemort from Harry Potter.
Oh, really?
I thought about Voldemort so much in this movie. I was like, wow, he's been practicing to not have a nose for so long. Training for this.
Is it all right if I just play the quick trailer for this? Sure. I have it queued up here. I think this is it. I hope it's it.
Name, rank, serial number.
Sorry, can't help you. I think I was a pilot.
Are you German?
No.
How do you know you're not German if you don't remember anything?
They found him near a plane crash in the Sahara.
Why are you so determined to keep me alive?
Because I'm a nurse.
A man with no name, no country, and no past.
You're in love with him, aren't you?
Ask your saint who he is. Ask him who he's killed.
But beyond the mystery that holds him captive lies the memory of a love that can set him free.
Promise me you'll come back for me.
I promise. I'll come back for you. I promise. I'll never leave you.
Return to me. Where does that sound familiar? I don't know.
Atonement. Sorry.
All right. So let's get to some movie facts. Sam, do you have some queued up for us?
Indeed, I have some movie facts. So this film was directed by none other than Anthony Minghella. And he also wrote the screenplay for what she actually won an Academy Award, I believe, for Best Adapted Screenplay. He also did that one award for The Talented Mr. Ripley, which he also wrote the screen for. I did not know that.
Also known as the Better Saltburn.
Yeah, that's very true. It's based on The English Patient by Michael, produced by Saul Zantz. And before I get into some technical details, just wanted to mention the cast. Ralph Fiennes, Juliette Binoche, the great Willem Dafoe, Kristin Scott Thomas, Naveen Andrews, Colin Firth, Julian Wadham, and Jürgen Prochnow. And a huge shout out to the cinematography by John Seal. I think this is like one of the best looking desert movies in terms of technical, you know, cinematography. He's done a lot of other cinematography work, including, which surprised me, The Perfect Storm with George Clooney, Mark Wahlberg, which also looked, you know, really good. It has those New England colors and the ocean and stuff. Huge shout out to Walter Murch, the editor. And I'm going to mention the Academy Awards in a minute. The music is by Gabriel Yared. And for me, the music is maybe like 50% of why I personally like this movie. Distributed by Miramax. This came out November 15th, 1996. Quick note, I wanted to see it then, but I was with my parents and they all went to see that. But because I had like a 12-year-old friend with me, they made
me. You had to see Space Jam.
I had to go see 101 Dalmatians with Glenn Close. Right. But it was fine. It was good. But I did catch it later at Nathan, I don't know if you know this, but it's not the Avon, but there was a theater in Providence, Rhode Island that was like had couches where you'd sit on couches.
The cable car.
The cable car. That's where I saw this.
I remember the cable car.
Yeah.
The print. Yeah. I was 15 when this came out. The print of that at the cable car. That was the boy. Did that movie look so?
That's history.
Beautiful. This movie is actually, ironically, about within 2 or 3 minutes. It's the same exact runtime as Out of Africa. you know, where the movie's like 2 hours and 36 minutes, and there's like 10 minutes of credits.
I had no problem staying awake for this one.
Totally. I hear you. Big box office success. The budget was $31 million, not including marketing, and it made $232 million. So big success. And just regarding where it was shot, this movie was shot on location in Tunisia and Italy. And
on location, man, it makes a difference.
Oh God, it makes a difference. Yeah, I'll get into it later. What I love about this movie is it feels like it's this huge epic budget, but man, were they economical shooting that. In fact, Steven Spielberg was so inspired watching this movie that he cut the budget of Amistad when they said it was going to cost this much. I think he said, no, I've seen it done cheaper for English Patient. We can do it cheaper.
Wow.
I was going to ask if $30 million was a lot in 1996.
No, I mean, it was no cheap movie, but that's not like big
budget. I would look at this and assume this cost more than that.
Yeah. Okay.
But to give you a sense, like Jurassic Park 1993 was like $60 million.
Oh, okay.
So $64 million, give or take. Lastly, I'll just mention Oscar now. It was nominated for 12 Oscars. It won 9, including Best Director for Anthony Minghella, Best Picture, Best Supporting Actress, Juliette Binoche won. Best Editing, actually, it was the first Oscar. It was the first editing nomination for a digitally edited film. This film was edited on digital, non-linear editing program, I'm assuming. And so that was really cool because now like everything is edited that way. Ralph Fiennes and Kristin Scott Thomas were both nominated for Best Actor and Actress. They didn't win. And lastly, the AFI ranked it the 56th greatest love story of all time. So I don't know what the other ones are, but so yeah, it did well. It was well received in its time. And I was like 15, so I remember it pretty clearly. And I saw it in the theater actually twice back then at the cable car. Thank you for reminding me of the name of that theater. I totally forgot that place. Yeah.
And it did very well with the BAFTAs as well. Best film, supporting actress, adapted screenplay, cinematography, editing, and original music. And Golden Globes, best picture for drama. I mean, this thing swept everywhere.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sam. There's I just wanted to hop on I think one or two other things here. You mentioned a couple of the crew members on this. John Seale, I just want to say, cinematographer, incredible. And his track record, I mean, he did one of my all-time favorite movies, Witness. I should say, yes.
I didn't know that. I love that movie.
Yeah, wow. Witness, and I think one of all of our favorite movies, especially Ellie, Dead Poets Society. He shot that.
I love that movie.
And in contemporarily, wow. He did the first Harry Potter movie and Mad Max Fury Road. So this guy has done everything. God.
He's got some great stuff.
He also did 3,000 Years of Longing, which this movie really reminds me of. Mm. Like, they feel very of a set.
But since Mad Max Fury Road, I think that movie, just the 3,000 Years of Longing, is that what it is? Or is the only film he's done since Fury Road. So he's kind of slowed down a lot. I don't know if he's retired or he's just really slowed down on the workload.
That's amazing.
He's earned it.
I glanced over his. I did not realize he did all those movies. And regarding the first Harry Potter, that movie looks great. The visuals in that, like, I just the lighting and the, like, man, damn.
To your point, so Sam, cool. That movie still looks great.
Yeah,
I feel
it
always ends up on a rewatch. That movie still looks great.
It does, man. Thanks for sharing that. I did not know. I got to research him. Like, this guy's awesome.
He is. All right. So, and I like to add this little bit of tidbits of information about the release date. As you mentioned, this came out on November 15th, 1996. Coming out on this day, as I mentioned this before, Space Jam came out on November 15th of that same day. And The Mirror Has Two Faces. I don't know if anybody remembers that. I think Jeff Bridges and I forget who else was in that, but I never saw it. Yeah. Released the week before was Ransom, Mel Gibson.
I saw that,
Yeah, I saw that in the theater, I remember. And released the week after was Jingle All the Way.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I got to get the present and, you know, my son.
And Star Trek First Contact.
Yes. Oh, I saw that in the theater. God, I love Star Trek First Contact. In fact, it's like, Star Trek.
good time for movies, yeah. All right. What do we think about this film? I think I drew the short straw, so I guess I'm going first.
Nathan, what did you think about this film?
All the pressure is on me. I didn't want to go first in this because I said it before we began. I geeked out so much on Atonement last week. I think I've got nothing left in me.
Listeners, if you haven't heard our Atonement episode, go back quick.
I just went down this deep rabbit hole for Atonement, and I'm like, I don't have it in me to ever do that again.
And if you go back and listen to the Atonement episode, you can see me make some jackass comments that I really regret. Yeah. Too late. It's on the air.
So this, you know, this film just should be luxuriated in more than any of the other films I think we watched, part of this epic romance series. I feel like this one encapsulates all of the sweeping epic romance that transcends this genre that we've been watching. I may also add that I'm really glad that we're ending on this one too, because I think it touches all the themes that the previous films all did to some extent, you know, forbidden love, non-linear storytelling set to the backdrop of a war or conflict, and I guess ultimately ending where one or both protagonists suffer some tragic ending. But those cornerstones of the series are settled deeply in the world of historical and political elements, which I think is cool. The events of the ongoing war have impact on the characters. We don't ever really see World War II, but we sense it. We feel it.
Well, we get some cool planes.
Yeah. Planes. How many movies have we watched this year that just have a plane or a plane crash in it? I mean, can we get a movie without a plane crash in it? Like,
that should be one of our letterbox lists.
Yeah. You know, there's so much striking symbolism throughout this movie. There's multifaceted characters, especially the female leads, you know, with Kristen Scott Thomas and Juliette Binoche. You know, there's just interwoven storylines that are masterfully weaved together. You know, these characters creating an interconnective narrative that I think someone could find confusing. But, you know, I'm going to balance all this out. somehow. I know I'm just being really scattered with these thoughts, but this movie is so big. I'm trying to contextualize all of this, and it's really hard for me because I don't know how I feel about all of this. I feel like I watched this great epic movie, but I still am not 100% if I know what it all amounts to. The romance between, I'm going to mess up his name. I never really got it down. Al-Mashi?
I think it's Al-Mashi. The British guy's like, Al-Mashi.
Okay, so Al-Mashi and Catherine, I found to be the least interesting part of this film. And it might be because I couldn't get over Ralph Fiennes' portrayal of him. He's kind of a first-class posh asshole.
I think he's deeply unlikable in this movie.
I found him really hard to like or even root for. The guy on his team I could get behind was Maddox. He was fun, charming, educated, and not a brooding ball of detached emotions.
Again, we have an out of Africa symptom here.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. Because of this, I had a difficult time finding my way into the central romance. And the present day version of Al-Mashi, I again struggled mightily with his motivations. I don't think the film does a great job explaining his motivations after the accident when he's being cared for by Hannah. The way it uses flashbacks to show his past. The romance I did fall head over heels for is between Hannah and Kip. You know, Kip's played by Naveen Andrews. I think he's really good in this. He needs to be in more films. I loved him in Lost, and that's where I remember him from. I'm going to leave it at that for right now. I'm sounding like a broken record. I'm not making a lot of sense here.
What's your rating, Nathan?
I'm going to give it a 3. I think that I love the grand epic scale of this. It's my second favorite movie in this retrospective still, but I can't wait to talk about the motivations of Al-Mashi. I want to ask you guys about, you know, the whole amnesia part of it. Because I have theories about, I mean, not really much of a theory, but I want to think that there's more to it than there might be. I want to believe that he could be an unreliable narrator. But I feel like maybe I want something to be more than there is in this movie, but the movie's not giving it to me. I'm going to pass it to B.
Sure, yeah. I hear what you're saying. I don't think this movie is trying to keep anything from you. Like in the way that Atonement, I think, wants you to figure things out in terms of Ralph Fiennes being an unreliable narrator. I don't think that's it. I think they would have alluded to that more heavy-handedly. So that I was kind of on board with whatever they told me was what was happening. I really like this movie. So my history with this movie is that I remember hearing about it when it came out. And I even just the title, I was like, that's a grown-up movie. I don't think I'm going to be seeing that movie. That's a grown-up-ass movie. And then it wasn't until years later, I think it was playing on TV or something, and it was kind of like one of those in-the-background movies. So this is my first real, like, earnest watch of this film. And I had some memories. I was like, oh, right, I remember the makeup. Oh, right, I remember the planes. But this is my first time really sitting down and watching it fully formed with intention start to finish. And I had a real deep appreciation for it. I think in general, there's a few narrative and thematic structures in place in this movie that will like automatically engender it to me always. I am a sucker if a movie is told through flashback. I love that. Brief Encounter, Atonement does it a little. Big Fish, Eternal Sunshine. I mean, I love these movies. So automatically, this is just going to hit some of those right notes for me. I just was sold by the storytelling function, but pulsating through it. And Nathan, I know we talked a little bit about this before the episode. We have Herodotus and this like very pretentiously academic Greek histories, which born and bred New Englander, pretentious academia is another thing I'm a sucker for. So yes, please spoon feed me more of that. But I think more than the subject matter of histories, because I did try and get into it a little bit. Spoiler alert, super boring. But the function of it, which was like, oh, here's two people of a similar ilk with similar passions who are able to find each other through this. You know, when we have Catherine's character in the desert telling her story, and we have Ralph Fiennes as the academic being drawn to it. But more than that, I think woven through becomes a movie about storytelling and a movie about the intimacy of telling stories. And I think we see that a lot when they start to tell each other the story of their own romance in the flashback setting. And you can see that even when she's like pasting her paintings in the book, and how that's a real pivotal moment. They're writing their own narrative together. And I thought that was really beautiful. And up until the end, up until present day with Juliette Binoche, he's weaving a story. And I thought through that lens, I came to really appreciate the film. I also found Fiennes' character pretty unlikable. I thought he was a little unintentionally chauvinistic. I think he thinks he was being really gentlemanly and really kind, but I think to a modern woman, even Colin Firth was like, she can make up her own mind. She can decide all these things. And it made him sort of automatically look a little dated. But I thought he came across as a little coarse, which I think I forgave a little bit more in the present day scenes, because who wouldn't be in that situation, right? He's like bedridden. But yeah, I'm rambling here. The dual nature of storytelling, I think, was the real standout. I was impressed that both parts of the movie had such three-dimensional characters. I feel like sometimes the present day serves as a narrative structure, but it can get left behind. But I would die for Juliette Binoche. I would die for her relationship with the seeing guy. I love them. I thought they were so sweet. I loved Willem Dafoe in this. I thought he brought a great depth and urgency to why we're telling the story now, why we see Ralph Fiennes now. I thought that made a lot of sense. I don't know that both halves were equal to some of their parts. I felt like because of the switching back and forth, it prevented me from getting like swept away in the way I did with Atonement emotionally. But I think I was definitely on board. I liked it. Sorry, the end. That was so long.
It's great.
Awesome. Wait, how many stars?
Yeah, what do you give it?
So I gave Atonement 4, and I give this 4 too. Different reasons, but like they're both 4-star movies. Okay.
All right. Awesome. Ellie.
Okay, so here's my review of this film. I watched this film back in the day. Carlos was probably just like a newborn. And at that time, my marriage wasn't in a good place, right? So when I watched this film, I totally connected to the part of, is it Kristen? Katie? What's her name?
Kristen.
Catherine. Or? Catherine. Because I feel that Catherine's not happy in her marriage. Because why else would a woman have a secret affair with someone else unless you're not happy with the husband you are having at hand? So one, he was always gone. He was never there for her. So she was left alone a long time. You know, so I, as a woman in a marriage where there was, you know, the husband's always missing, going out there doing his thing, I totally connected with this character because of that, mm-hmm. because she was longing to have that companion comes along. What's his name?
Amashi.
And
Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah. And as egotistical and as, you know, what's the word? You said it, B.
Chauvinistic
that he made of appear as a character.
Didn't matter. I totally
it didn't matter
her
because
her love was so palpable.
And I don't think she was planning on falling in love with this guy. You know, it started out as a, you know, like, you know, an acquaintance, a friendship, like anything else. And it turns into something much more. But the thing is, here's a woman that's left alone lots of time. The husband's doing his thing. Comes this guy and practically sweeps her away. And that happens a lot, you know. And so was it wrong that she cheated on her husband? I think her husband was a chauvinistic pig too. I think he was like, not only that, but he does what most men that are jealous. We don't see in the movie the confrontation of him and her, because up until the time that they were watching the movie, I don't think he even knew. She even knew that he already knew that she was cheating on him. Because
I don't think so either.
No, she never knew. So all we see is this guy practically trying to murder his wife. And we see that every single time. We see domestic violence every single day, right? So men try to end the life of that woman because they don't want to
do the murder-suicide at the end.
Yeah. Murder-suicide. Like, you know, so I think for that, I have no pity for Geoffrey Clifton at all. Because one, you put your wife in that situation. I'm sorry. You put your wife in a situation.
Alone in the desert with someone who looks as good as Ralph Fiennes.
I'm telling you, like, right? And then he was, as much as the character might seem chauvinistic, to her, he wasn't. To her, he was the answer to her loneliness. And she went with it. And she was in that moment living the best romance of her life because her husband couldn't give it to her. And that's exactly what I saw in this movie. And it's sad. It's really sad that the husband, you know, the natural thing to do is talk to each other and say, hey, if you're in this loveless relationship, then let's end it. Right. Mm-hmm. But Geoffrey didn't do that. He took it upon his hand to end everything for her. That's how jealous and vicious he is. And that's how I saw this man. Like, basically, you're
that's
vicious.
That's a great read.
Yeah. You're going to just, you know, end the relationship. So there's so many parts about this movie that I really loved. I'm a journal type
but
of person.
But at the same time, I don't think he was trying to kill his wife.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, he was. Because when he's pointing the plane down, he basically crashed the plane. Yeah.
Do you think he tried to kill?
Yeah.
I think that was an accident.
I think he wanted to kill...
Kill him. He wanted to kill Amalshby.
I think he wanted to kill all three of them.
All three of them. I think he wanted to just take... He said, if I can't have my wife, I'm taking...
None of us.
Interesting. Okay, I never really thought about it. Okay.
And but I can see how that's open interpretation. And keep going, Ellie. I just wanted to say something really quick, Ellie.
Yeah.
I agree with you so much about... I thought Colin Firth's acting job as the guy, the jealous guy, was excellent. And I actually... know some people who I think dislike the movie because for whatever reason they relate to Colin Firth's character, or maybe they're the dude who has had a wife that has, and so they're like, so they can't get past that. And they're like, oh, this movie is about, you know, betrayal, but it's because deep down they feel the insecurity within themselves because they know they're Colin Firth and they're not Ralph Fiennes, and it hurts them.
Yeah. And it's true. And at first glance, you will kind of side with Colin, you know, with Geoffrey, the character, right? You will side with him and you feel bad for him, like, especially when he comes to celebrate their anniversary and he sees her living with Fiennes. And the thing is, what you have to understand is that Colin, when it was Christmas and she went inside and had her, you know, her little... you know, whatever, sexy scene with fans.
Sexy
fans. Yummy scene.
With bagpipes, yeah.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah. Yummy
scene. And he was like, he comes in and he goes, oh, I heard that you were feeling bad. And then he's like, what is that smell I feel? Dude, that's the sex smell you're obviously smelling, the sex smell, right? So he's like smelling. And in that moment, he decided, and I can see it, in that moment, Colin decided that he was going to come back unannounced, something that he's never done, okay, because he's never even been there for his wife. He wanted to come unannounced to catch her in the act.
He was already subconsciously specific, suspicious. He couldn't admit him to himself that he was going, I'm doing this for the fun. And then when he's driving up and he sees her getting in the car, He deep down, he was hoping it wasn't going to happen.
It wasn't.
And he's like, oh my God. And he can't handle it. And it's just like, ooh.
In my opinion, this character is a coward. He's a coward because he never faced his wife with the truth.
Mm-hmm.
He never did. Instead, he did everything sneakily. She was cheating on him, but she wasn't hiding it. You know, she went out there and, you know, she knew that it was wrong. But at the same time, this guy went around it. He was sneaky about it. He smelled her smell. Then he goes into like, oh, I'm going to go surprise my wife since when? And then he crashes the plane to try to kill all of them. Mm. So hello, no, you're a coward because you could never face your wife to ask, do you love me still? Are you in love with someone else? That's how you fix shit. You don't go and kill people. Okay. And this happens every day. And I'm thinking like, you know, why wouldn't you just be able to say something to her? And so, and I do love the journaling part because I'm a journal person. I write journals and I've been writing journals forever. And journals can tell you a story about people's life and what's been, and what's been going on in their lives. Right. Especially if you've, you know, if you're in a bad situation with a marriage or something and you start to write and then you look back and you can literally write a story about what happened. But, you know, and then there's love story as well. And I really love Juliet. Juliet is one of my favorite actresses and I love her in anything that she does. And she portrays, I love, you know, the part where, you know, when he asks, when Fane asks, why are you here with me? But why you stay behind? And she gives a very simple answer. Because I'm a nurse, you know, and I love that because it's so sincere. It's so sincere because she's a nurse. But again, she has nothing really anymore because her significant other probably has been killed. Remember, it gets she gets no news that he was killed. Her friend was killed with a bomb, right? So she's lost two people that she really loved and cared for. And
but now, she still brings so much brightness to this role.
She does. And she just But there's a childlike person in that character that I love about her. You know, when she looks at that abandoned whatever castle and she's like a little child, like, oh, the things that I could do with this castle or church, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And then she puts it together and, you know, it's so, she's so selfless in this film when she gets the eggs from William Dafoe and she quickly cooks them and gives them to the patient, you know? I mean, that's selfless. And then William, okay, I never thought...
Oh, wait, I want to say one thing. I just love the line where I think she comes and says, there's a man downstairs. He may stay. He brought us eggs. And Ray Fiennes says, why does he lay eggs? There's some good humor in this movie.
There is some good humor. Like when she's putting the books as a stairs. And he goes, what is all that noise? Are you killing rats or are the Germans? Yes. Something like that. I forget what he said. But I love her story because I love the flashbacks and I love, you know, just the whole thing about hers is also a romance, you know, Juliet, it's also a romance. And then comes William. And let me tell you something. I've always thought of William. I'm sorry, William, but I never thought of you as handsome. But in this film, I thought he was kind of hot.
I feel like William Dafoe is like coming right off the set of like Wild at Heart or something like that. Cause he's,
I was thinking of Wild at Heart.
He's bringing that same energy.
I never seen, you know, I've forgotten that William is in this film. It's really good looking.
This is pre can Spider-Man come out?
So
everybody looks good in this movie.
Everybody does. I mean,
like, I'm so glad we caught this on film, you know?
So I love the love story between Vince and Kristen because it's relatable. And any woman who watches this film, who's been in a bad marriage, will totally connect to Kristen and that love story. Okay. And also connect to the fact that the husband just tried to kill her. But he ended up killing her because she ends up dying, right? But there's a sadness to this film because of the tragic that the love story could be. The agony of Fane's when he's trying to save her and he gets jailed. I felt his agony because he knew that if he didn't go back, he knew she was going to die. Yeah. But I also think that he was not having amnesia. I really think that he knew he was very much conscious and he knew exactly what was going on and he knew who he was. I don't think he was ever not knowing who he was. And I know he knew who William was too when he showed up.
That's the thing that I want to kind of get into as well. I feel like it's trying to play his cards close to the vest about, you know, well, not really. I guess we're supposed to believe that he has amnesia, and I'm not really buying it.
No.
But I feel like that's supposed to be like an obvious thing that we're supposed to just accept. But I want to believe that it is kind of possibly ambiguous, or there are hints laid out throughout this movie where we call that into question. But I didn't really see it explicitly, that those clues in the movie the way I would expect. I mean, I just maybe I put it in my own head that it's there.
But like, if he had amnesia, Nathan. If he had amnesia, because the way the camera was doing things was like he'll go back to his face, you know, and through his eyes you could see he was going back to his life story with Kristen. So in my mind, I'm thinking he knows where he is, because if you have amnesia, you don't remember anything.
So I don't want to get too deep into this because I want to get to Sam's opinion. Yeah. I want to do a rating on this, but I want to get to this some more because there's so much that's going on between the flashbacks in the present day in 1943. Because I find it kind of weird how my opinion is that it's not very clear if the flashbacks are something that is having an impact on Al-Mashi remembering these things, and like, is it changing him? Because we'll get to this some more. Do that, Ellie, but okay, I want to get to Sam too before he hasn't really given his full opinion on this. But yeah, B, did you want to say something?
I was just gonna say, Ellie, you mentioned like how just the tragedy that happened around Laszlo. I kind of think of present day as like a redemption arc for him, because everything centered around Al-Mashi, around Ralph Fiennes' character, is like, he brings all this tragedy, you know, like if you get sucked into his orbit, even with Willem Dafoe and then Juliette Binoche, you know, she like abandons the service and goes and serves him. And so like allowing Willem Dafoe at the end to sort of like overcome his feelings and Juliette to feel a romance, I think is this like demonstration of life going on after the effects of him. But it was just interesting sort of how the negative impacts he had on the world around him constantly. And I don't think that's all the war, you know?
No, I think this is the character. I don't think it was the war, because the war wasn't there when they first started, you know? So,
yeah.
Ellie,
yeah.
What is your rating for this? I want to get to Sam, please.
I'll give it 5 stars.
5?
Yeah, I really like this film.
5-star territory. Yeah. Wow, that's great. All right. Sam. I'm sorry, you've waited so long.
Not at all. No, I love what you guys are saying, and you've said a lot. I could go on and on, but I'll just get to a few specific things. I love Anthony Mignola's direction in this movie. I think the performances are excellent, but the camera angles enhance character moments for me personally in a way that Atonement felt more painterly, and I felt kind of closed out emotionally. I'm only speaking for myself there. With this film, I felt really emotionally let in on the moment. And rather than go through tons of moments in the film, I'm going to zero in detailed on one specific moment. B, a point you actually brought up. I totally hear you about Al-Mashi's chauvinism. But when he's walking up to Clifton and he says, you know, are you sure you want to leave her with us? A woman can't handle herself in the desert. I don't know if he actually believes that. I think he doesn't trust himself and is so attracted to her that he does not want to be in the position where he's alone with her and he's worried for the situation because their chemistry is so intense. That I
like that read so much better.
I think he's trying to just speak Clifton's language because he wants her to stay, but the sparks between them are so intense. And going on to the camera angles there, Clifton goes off to the plane and then you just see Ralph Fiennes standing there. And if you notice, Catherine is in the background, standing still, watching them. And so she's there. The chemistry is already there. They're so tuned in. There's so many of these moments when she's around the campfire and they're all singing in the desert. and she's telling her story, and it rack focuses to Ray Fiennes, and he just kind of takes a moment to himself, and he his head goes down, he goes like, oh shit. To me, I read that moment as, oh my God, I'm head over heels in love with her already. How do I handle this? I am in trouble right now. I'm sinking fast. And the whole film, to me, is peppered with direction that really enhances character moments for me. And so their acting sells it anyway. But the combination of acting and cinematography and the direction enhancing these interpersonal relationships hits me so hard in a way that some movies don't and some movies do. This one hits me like a ton of bricks. Regarding Seal's cinematography, there's a scene when they're, you know, when their cars have flipped over and they're stuck in the desert at night before the sandstorm is coming. The way that shot is lit, there's a look to it that is so incredible to me. And I clear, obviously there's lights because if you were in the desert, it'd be a lot darker, but it doesn't matter because it's so emotionally,
it's romantic.
It's so romantic. And it, it hits the feels when they go to the Cave of Swimmers, where they see the like ancient paintings that hits me hard. For me, this movie hits me on such a subconscious fundamental levels that it kind of gives me the chills, and it also gives me like hope that my spirit is like still alive and still like a chance for adventure, because I have been like hurting lately. And so when you're not doing well and you see a movie that reminds you of the possibility of romance and adventure, it hits like a ton of bricks. I will say too that, and I'm not doing that bad. I won't go into it. I'll say it's like a rough 2 weeks, but life in general is good. I can't complain. So, but I will say what's fascinating to me about this movie is I saw it in 1996 as a 15-year-old. In 2004, my friend in college really loved this movie, and we would have kind of movie nights where a bunch of friends would get together. We'd watch, and this is the film we watched at his apartment. And what's interesting, my brain or my perception of reality at the age of 23, there were so many subtle things that I missed. I appreciated the epicness. I liked the scope and the scale, but I didn't, there were things I didn't notice. And so when I saw it now as a 42-year-old, I was almost shocked at all these things that I picked up on that I didn't see before. It hit me with such alarming clarity. In a good way, I feel like a different person now because I saw the motivations of the characters. I noticed things I didn't even notice before. It's like there was this evolution where it was like, oh my God. And it was the viewing that I had the other night was like hard hitting in a good way, but it was also like intense. I was like,
ooh. You know what's funny, Sam, though? What's funny is that when I first watched this film, I actually cried and I was very emotional with the film. Watching it now, I was not crying. I was not emotional. I was actually pissed off.
It's interesting. I feel your emotion because I know what's coming and I know the emotional beats. My emotion came from where I was. My emotion was inward. It came from where I am in my life now as opposed to where I was in my life in 23. I did not, you know, shed a tear at the emotional beats. When I saw it in the theater for the first time, I found it overwhelmingly emotional. I think it's just because I know the beats and I know what's coming, you know, the grandeur and the music and there's some tense, like that scene in Tobruk with Willem Dafoe getting his thumbs cut off is just like that hits hard. And so there's a lot more things I could say, but I will simply say very positive reaction. And I love the intercutting. I think this movie is about like memory and time. And I love how the sound design where like he'll hear like the pattering of feet, then that will switch to like someone playing drums in the past. Like he's going in and out of his morphine haze. And I happen to love the pastime desert story. And I love the later story, but that desert story, in fact, and this has nothing to do with this movie, and I'm about to make a sacrilegious comment, but I like the way the desert looks in this film better than in the two Dune movies. And I've got to be a maniac for saying that.
Yeah.
And I might retract that later if like people come at my house with like, pictures,
you know. No, it looks beautiful.
I think that's fair enough. Can I mention one thing? I want you to continue, but the desert stuff for a moment, I want to tie something back into the cinematography since you brought that up for a moment. Some of my all time favorite shots of this movie were all those flying sequences and the looking down overhead at the desert. This movie opens up with this amazing, first of all, that shot of the, it looks like shadows and the Sanskrit that starts off the story. We're going on this intimate but also epic journey. And I think this movie is about the juxtaposition of like the macro and the micro, which I think is important. You have this plane flying over the desert, and we're constantly being shown the comparison of the epic desert landscapes, the contours, but it's also being juxtaposed to like the bed sheets that, and like the, especially the human body that are always in contrast. And I like that because you see this like what could be like a desert space of like miles and miles, but also you got bed sheets of which is just a few feet, or like the contours of a human body, you know, which is just a little space, you know? And I love that we're constantly going back and forth between those two things. And that is so unique. I've never seen that really in a movie. And at one time I thought I was looking at the desert, but I'm looking at, I think, part of Kristen Scott Thomas's like some at one point or something like that. I'm like, how do they do that?
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Sam.
No.
I was going to say to that point, and something you and I, Sam, had talked about was like the projection of the character's emotions onto the desert, this like blank, overwhelming landscape. And I think when the movie starts, we have this like landscape rife with possibility, right? There's hope, there's romance, we're being literally swept away. And over time, it slowly morphs into the antagonist of the film and is something that can really harm our characters. And it's solely dependent on the perspective that these interlopers are bringing into their landscape. But in the present day, those micro moments, like those bedsheets, are Ralph Fiennes' desert, right? That's where his body is mangled and stuck. And so that becomes his projection onto it. That's his whole world and his discomfort. And I just think I love these movies where the landscape becomes a character. You know, I think that's so powerful.
Yes. And what with the macro and the micro, what you're saying, Nathan, I really responded to that too. This is just, I have a romantic spirit at heart. I am a hopeless romantic, and it is the
core join my club. My soul.
And shameless plug here, but the whole point of my Walks of World YouTube show, it's the romance of landscape and how it makes me feel. So this movie with the macro and the micro and the romance, it's one of those epic sweeping adventures that makes you think about the grandeur of life. And to end, before I give the rating, I'll say one thing, going back to Colin Firth, who does an amazing, everyone's really
good. Yeah, really understated.
He does it so well. I think, and I'm just changing up a little bit, I don't know if he was intentionally trying to kill the three of them. I think he was so consumed with anger and rage that he wasn't thinking about the outcome. So if the plane hit Ralph Fiennes and the two of them lived, he'd deal with it later. But I think he was so consumed that he just wanted to just ram it into him and maybe subconsciously, though, he did want everyone to die. So I can flip it on it.
Because a domestic violence, when they're never consumed with their anger. They're angry, but they know exactly what they're doing. It's a choice.
I don't think they're self-reflective enough. I don't know if Colin Firth is self-reflective enough.
I will say with that, and just ending my review, you know, talk about the darkness and the demise of all these characters. It ends on a very, you know, positive note for Juliette Binoche's character. And what I find actually one of the most emotional scenes, and I don't know why it hits so hard, it's after Ralph Fiennes is already dead at the end and she's leaving in the truck and she looks back at the Italian monastery and the tower, and it's like his story is left behind in the past. He's gone. the story of him and Catherine are over, but she is alive. She will take these memories and mm-hmm. her future is bright. And the curse of all her loved ones dying may be lifted at this point. So it ends on this optimistic, hopeful, yeah. you know, a character made it through this tragic epic story. Mm. I'll end by saying I'd give it 5 stars as well. Boy, does the movie hit me. Yeah.
Tell me why. I don't know you guys, but tell me why when you're having a secret affair, the sex is steamier and more passionate than if you're actually doing it with your husband or wife.
It's because it's forbidden.
Secret?
I have to admit to an affair to answer that.
Yeah.
Right. Wait, what?
Right. Same.
It's because it's forbidden, you know.
It's gotta be, and that makes it yeah. more passionate and steamier, and because you know who wants to have sex with their same husband every day, every night, or every morning.
Unless
right?
you really like, had to wait.
It becomes really boring eventually. It's what, like, oh, what, I have to face this dude again. Come on.
What people should take away from this podcast is marriage sucks, guys. No.
It's good. You can get
it wherever you can get it with whomever you can get it with, I guess.
Listen, they were in the desert. They were thirsty.
The desert and its Lady Mountains.
Mm. You guys are talking me into a 4.5. I don't know how to say this.
Boy, I really shouldn't mention this, but because I've praised this movie so much, there is one shot I find unintentionally amusing, and it's so terrible,
which
but I'll
one?
Say it.
Which one?
It's, is it? Okay, she's reading to Ralph Fiennes as he's literally dying. She's given him
wait,
all the morphine.
Oh, Juliette Binoche. Yeah.
Yeah. And it cuts to a shot where, like, he's, like, clearly he has died, and he's yes. just like, and you, I'm like, it's, gee, you think? I guess he didn't make it. And it never hit me that way before, but for some reason I watched it the other night and I just found it unintentionally.
But you know what? Really,
I read something about that. I agree, yeah. Sam. I kind of guffawed at that moment. Like, you know what the reason is? If he could have died with his eyes closed or yeah. something. And what I think I read is that actually is a freeze frame. Because
oh, no way.
That yeah. they added that they kept repeating, they added grain to somehow. I'm really getting technical here, and it's a very odd thing that they had to do to achieve that. And I don't know why, because he couldn't stay still. Apparently, Ralph Fiennes can't play dead very well. So
like
if you
he was
watch,
in a shitload of makeup. I don't know if I
yeah. I agree, Sam, 100%. I looked at that. I actually watched it again. Like, that looks really goofy or something. Like,
put it this way. It's not a subtle shot.
No.
No.
Dead.
Yeah.
Like, joke. It's like, yeah. It's
the saddest part of this whole story.
The
saddest part for me of the whole story is when he rips that white dress, man.
Yeah.
I had the same thought. I was like, how is she going to walk home?
You know, well, I love that dress. It was so beautiful, and you just ripped it. Come on.
Well, she that's what you get for whacking Ralph Fiennes. You know, she shows up and it's just like slams him in the face, right?
Wow.
You know, regarding that scene,
that's what you get for being so damn hot, you know? I guess is what she's trying to say.
We've watched a lot of those like film noir movies where like the sex scenes in those where they really like they don't do it for me and they make me uncomfortable. The sex scenes in this movie, the passion works. Like they're not too long. I feel that the moment, like I like the sex scenes, and for some reason in other ones, it's just like,
have you guys,
cheesy Cheetos is the thing.
Have you read the think piece about modern movies? Cause we've seen such a decline in sex scenes, and there's a think piece out that's like, everyone is beautiful and no one's having sex.
Yeah, because now you could offend the whole world if you do it, because that's what happens now, because everybody gets offended.
Everything is sort of sanded down.
Hey, I want to talk about something that in this movie. I want to see what you guys thought about this. I love the scene where Kip takes Kay off to some church and I don't know where the, it's some other monastery, and it's this the most magical thing I think I've seen in a movie in a long time.
It's so where magical.
She almost is, and it hoists her up in this thing, and she's almost like this floating fairy with like a torch, and she's looking at all these tableaus. I mean, I imagine back in 1996, every woman is looking over at their boyfriend or husband like, how come you never take me to some abandoned monastery and hoist me up and look at tableaus at some ruins, you know? Like, I mean, like I never knew, you know? I don't know, but like, I remember seeing that and I was like, this is like incredible.
Do you know what that really reminded me of?
What?
Wings of Desire, the Wim Wenders movie, where she's a trapeze artist.
Shamefully, I have not seen it.
Great, but she's a trapeze artist, and an angel, you know, sort of falls in love with
that's,
her.
That's why I'm not in relationships. I don't think I can be good enough for anything.
None of us are. None of us.
I don't think. I don't think it's a real standard to take your woman to an abandoned monastery.
I beg to differ, though.
You were hoisted around the ruins of a monastery last week, Ellie. We know.
No, listen. Okay, I have my show of significant others that surprised me greatly with things that I was not expecting. My Habibi, for example, he called me his queen. He's from Egypt. He was an eye surgeon. Mm-hmm. He is an eye surgeon. And I dated him for 3 months. And yeah, he gave me the world. Like, mm-hmm. You're my queen and money is no object. And I'll take you wherever you want. And he even bought me tickets to go to Egypt, but I was not going to go to Egypt because he wanted me to go to Egypt to get married. And that was not going to happen. But it was one of those love affairs that I had. It wasn't a love affair. I was already, you know, separated. But it was like one of those affairs where, or a relationship. I should call it an affair. It was a relationship because it was 3 months. He was so kind to Carlos. You know, wherever we went to eat dinner, he always purchased dinner for him too. And I take it to, and he always called me Habibi. And I actually ended up writing a short novel and sent it to him with his
all about stories.
Yeah, and I sent it to him. The short novel is about our love story and how we met. And had I been late for another second, I would have never met him. But I wasn't.
And Ellie, and since I know it's, you know, not a good thing to be, you know, relationship with coworkers, but since you're leaving, I just wanted to tell you I've been in love with you this entire time.
But what are we doing about it?
We'll go fly wherever you want.
I love that scene.
There's something in someone, I think one of the reasons I love Juliet's story in the movie is because she's like the childlike character, and I identify. Mm-hmm. I actually identify with both women, with Krista because she's a married woman that's probably in a very unhappy marriage and doesn't know how to get out. And Juliet, because she's the child woman who has magic in her, no matter what's going on, she's still like, she's a survivor. She's going to do whatever it takes. And she's going to go to the very end to.
Exactly. And see, that's the good thing. I don't think Colin Firth is necessarily a bad guy. I just think he's a dull guy for her. He's just a dude.
Just a dude.
It's doing his thing. And he's like, when he's like, she's been crying on my shoulder all these years, and I convinced her to take my shoulder. Stroke of brilliance, really. It's just like he's a regular Joe, you know. And that's the point of his character, and it's like painful, but it's true.
A regular Joe that's always involved with his work.
Exactly.
Period.
You know, one other thing I want to talk about that kept coming up, particularly by the Laszlo character, was like, it doesn't matter where you come from, right? And for a movie that shows a whole lot of white people in this movie, as opposed to people who live where they're shooting, do we think this is maybe like an anti-war parable, an anti-colonial thing? Because this comes up a lot. Laszlo is constantly like, why does it matter where I come from? Who cares? He has this very academic perspective of like, good ideas and good people can come from anywhere.
I think so. I mean, yeah, it's like an undercurrent of the movie. You know what I mean? There's definitely it's a good anti-war movie in the sense that it shows the effect. I mean, even like Willem Dafoe literally has a line like, there was a consequence to what you did. It did this.
And he's like, it kind of feels like a parable, right? Like,
I can definitely.
Yeah, I don't
definitely
know. For me.
Yeah, man. I think the point is that even assholes deserve love.
Yeah, that's a good. That's a good one too.
That's what I took away.
That's what I've been telling Tom all these years.
I just couldn't help but think about the fact that when it's like 1939 and they're in the desert, I'm like, you guys got to go back to Los Angeles. Wizard of Oz is playing in the theater right now. That movie's great. Yeah.
Oh, it's a good movie too.
Well, you know what he's talking. Do you think that she really hit her head when she was leaving the movie theater?
I love that because I feel like she did.
She hit it by, yeah.
Do you think it really happened by, like, she really did by accident in actual scene and they just left it?
I guess that it was scripted, but I'm just guessing and I don't know. I do not know. That was just my feeling.
I just kept thinking both characters were so much stronger than I would ever be.
It looked authentic. Yeah. Like, it looked like it wasn't like the actress, like, messed up and walked into a pole.
That's what I thought.
It felt pretty much like it was part of. Was supposed to be part of it because it seemed like it would make sense. You know, you're trying to make this dramatic exit and you run into a pole. That's what life is like.
Yeah. It's true because I've run into my share of poles trying to get out of the situation. Yeah. So
it was kind of comical.
Speaking of that's what life is like, a great example of that, really brief, there's a great moment in the movie State in Maine, directed by David Mamet, where Philip Seymour Hoffman is sitting in a restaurant by a window and he's like, my screenplay is about purity. And right as he says that, really the car goes over a pothole behind him. It's like, and you're like, so it's one of those like moments. I'll say really briefly too, I love the line where they're really hitting it off and Catherine invites him to come back inside into the hotel. He's like, no, I must go home. She's like, no, come on, come. And he's like, he puts the line down. He's like, Mrs. Clifton. And she just goes, don't. As in, like, come on, you're attracted to me. I'm attracted to you. Don't play this game. Like, don't insult me like that.
That's why she's 100% selling the romance for me. Her performance in this movie is like, it's just her back must have hurt. She carried the whole thing. So good.
Her back must hurt.
Two quick things. I want to wrap this up and get to a couple things with Ellie before we end the show. But I want to just bring up the bomb defuse scene, which was one of the most intense things.
Holy mackerel!
Because I think we can all agree. I know we've all seen this a couple times, but even though I've seen this movie three times, I forgot. I always forget that Kip survives this, but it is so set up. This guy is a dead man, and everything points to him not surviving this scene. And it is a textbook example of how to set up and pay off like a scene with a suspense scene because it is incredible with the Americans showing up in the tanks and the tools getting dropped into the water. He is trapped in that hole and Juliette Binoche riding her bike and she sees the army going by. It is, you just know what's going to happen. You know, he's going to die. So it is, it's an incredible sequence.
It is.
Because
you know he's going to die, but the fact that he makes it, I like that with this movie is there's all this darkness, but it ends with a thread of hope for her future with Kip, even if she's not going to see him right away. But it's like, I like it when movies, they pile on dark themes, but they give just a sliver of optimism at the end because humans, it's kind of like the theme of like, ending the news with like you talk about all the tragedy of the world and the last story is, but such and such, you know, found new happiness because of his love for dogs. Like
if it bleeds, it leads. But
humans need a little bit of hope, and I just like that the movie gives a little bit of hope because if it just ended with like the plane crashing and they're dead, and then like the camera pulls back and you just see plane wreckage and it's like life sucks. The end. Like, oh fuck! Come on, man.
I also love movies that I really love movies that begin with the ending.
Mm-hmm. I really do.
Me too. Because it makes me want to keep watching. Like, what happened? Well,
that's what's really unique about this. This movie is not just a romance. It's also a mystery that you're unfolding, you know, figuring out as we go. So it's one of the things
you,
I do like
about it. Watching it the second time, I totally forgotten how it went. You know, so it's a that sense of surprise. And it's really nice to watch a film that you really loved back then and watch it again because you see parts now that make more sense to you and you have a different mindset about it.
Totally.
So. Exactly.
I would love to watch it again.
A really quick comment. If there are any like aspiring filmmakers out there that happen to be listening to this podcast, go with your heart and tell the story that you want to, because I guarantee this movie was a huge hit, but I guarantee that if you took this concept in an alternate universe and this movie hadn't existed and you tried to pitch this to some marketing executive, they would say, it's confusing. Can't it just be linear? Do they have to die? Can't you give it a happy ending? All this like, and just be true to yourself, because if you feel the passion, that can be marketable in and of itself. And I know that's a random comment, but I've been dealing with that lately.
Not random at all. It's not random.
Just the passion. If you have the passion for a story you want to tell, there's a chance that someone else out there wants to watch it too. So never give up.
And you know, Sam, I'm yet to find the story that I want to tell as an actress. I've done films, right? But I'm yet to find that writer or basic writer, director that wants to shoot a film that I feel, you know, it's the movie that, yes, I want to tell this story so badly. And I find myself that, you know, here in New England, most of the films that I do see are horror or I'm yet to find something that's truly heartfelt for me in this area. So we'll see. I'm still like, maybe it has to be where I have to write it myself and then start.
Break out your journal, Ellie. Come on.
write the best notebook story yet.
You would write a great romance.
You will find it. Just because you don't know at the moment there, like the search is like you can't force it. Like if it's not there yet, it will be. It has to be organic, but it will come to you.
Yeah. Writing it is easy. I wouldn't know what to do about being a director or cinematographer or anything like that. But you know, there's a great
director named Sam Cole, and let me tell you.
Oh my gosh, that's right! I totally forgot about that. Hello,
this guy, you know, like whoa.
We'll go film it at the California desert or something.
Oh yeah, we actually could do that. Yeah.
Head out to Palmdale. You know. Speaking of deserts, I remember I was working on Fear Factor many, many years ago. We were out in Palmdale, and the first episode I ever did was they were on a biplane walk, and it just reminded me of The English Patient. So we had planes flying all over the place in the desert, and it was
awesome.
And it was so windy, and I had to wear goggles to keep the sand out of my eyes. So it was like I was living this movie.
to keep the sand out of my ass. I don't know.
Manhattan Beach was the original Cave of Swimmers.
You know, speaking of, you know, I wanted to mention one other thing here I thought was interesting. So Laszlo Amalshi was a real person. This is a fictional story, but he really is a person that discovered the Cave of Swimmers in 1933. So that is a true part of this.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Yeah, you didn't know that?
I'm telling our listeners that.
Oh. Where have you been? Just kidding. I didn't even know that.
We never mentioned that in the.
That's a good fact. Yeah.
They've got that like that text blurb, I think, at the end of somewhere in the credits, later on in the credits, it says parts of this are true, parts of this are false.
Some of the characters are fictional.
It's way, way at the end.
I didn't stick around for the credits.
You're right. I remember that
after
now.
The credits? This is like post credits?
Yeah, it's in the credits. It just basically explains that the movie draws from real life things and the characters are fictional.
Was World War II?
That goes to say you guys don't watch the whole thing all the way to the end.
And do not watch the credits.
I usually do, but I don't read everything. I kind of listen to the music, the score, because I like listening to that, but I don't read everything.
Nathan,
I don't want to pick a side or like drive a wedge between us, but Ellie and I watched it. Boo, be in the
cause you know what? Great minds think alike.
That's true. But all of you are great.
Yes, you are.
And Bob's your uncle. So cheers. Yeah.
What? Bob is your uncle?
It's a random British.
It's a random phrase.
It's nothing.
I just hear it in movies and they're like, and Bob's your uncle. And it's just like, basically it just means like,
yeah, it's like when there's nothing else to say, they say Bob's your uncle.
Yeah.
I've never heard that before.
I'll be honest, Ellie, I'm with you. I never understood the reference.
Okay. Imagine me in the a work meeting, all of a sudden I go, Bob's your uncle. looking at me like, what the F is wrong with this girl?
Just say it to a British person, he'd be like, I'd like to buy you a pint because you said that.
I think it means like something easy.
Let's transition in a moment to our wrap up and our decisions on this. But before we do that, I just want to thank everyone for tuning into our show. Your feedback would be greatly appreciated. So if you agree or disagree with our opinions, reach out to us. Our email is backtotheframerate@gmail.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and TikTok, and you can find us at Back to the Frame Rate. We're also on X or Twitter, Back Frame Rate. Sign up for our newsletter, Frame Rate Month. You can do that by emailing us at backtotheframerate@gmail.com. And what we'd really love you to do is just spread the word and share our podcast episodes with your friends, your family, and leave us a rating and review. We need reviews. 5-star reviews would be the best, of course. So
send us your reviews.
Yes, please.
A Schwitter.
I had to review in Africa.
All right. And what I want to do is we're just going to do our decision on whether this movie gets saved into our vault or expunged, purged, banished to the fiery asteroid apocalypse. By the way, Ellie, even though you're no longer on our podcast, we will still let you join us when the time comes. You know, you will always have a spot. So make sure you come running. We'll open the vault. We'll open the door for you. You can still join us.
Absolutely. Right? So I need more estrogen.
I'm still coming. The apocalypse, I'm part of this crew.
Yes, you are.
Yes.
Y'all better not leave me behind.
Not leaving you behind. And as a parting gift, because in the world of this podcast, since it's supposed to take place in nuclear fallout, we have all pitched together to build you a special oxygen suit so that when you do leave the podcast, you will be safe while everyone else burns to a crisp and you can come back and be with us.
I love that.
And
yeah.
You have your special room that the notebook is on loop.
Oh, it has to be. Oh, I'd be just happy with the notebook for the rest of my time.
Every 2 hours, it just starts all over again.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's it. It's kind of like that movie, The End of the World, with the girl with the Friends episode. She just wants to watch Friends.
Yeah.
Speaking of Friends, have you seen the Seinfeld episode where Elaine hates the English patient?
And I mentioned that to Nathan. It was so funny.
I totally forgot about it.
She's like, the sex scenes are unforgivable.
I don't remember the episode clear, but I literally think there's a scene where she's watching the movie in the theater and she's like bored out of her mind. She's like,
Yes, there is.
I don't get it. Yeah.
There is. It's so funny. I meant to talk about that. I thought about Elaine for at least half of this movie. And I really liked it, but I couldn't stop thinking about Elaine. I'm just being like,
so true.
Oh, man. I'm going to jump into our decision on this. So I guess I have to go first. Mm-hmm. Now, as you heard before, I gave this a 3. I must still stand by this, even though I will gush over the technical achievement that this movie is. And I have so many positive things. We didn't really get into some of the story problems that I had as much as I may have wanted to, but we've talked enough about this, but I'll just say really my hang up is really the ending. I don't really feel like this movie lands the way I want it to. I have some real issues with it. I wish this movie ended with some more, had maybe more of an ambiguous ending. Where we kind of wonder if he was actually a Nazi spy, perhaps, or if I wanted something more from that.
I will say really briefly regarding that, and this is just my interpretation. Yeah. I totally understand the desire to have the ambiguity. I think that the way that with the film's flashbacks, I don't think it was trying to go for the unreliable narrator. I just think when it showed the flashbacks, it just showed what was happening. And I think the device with the time jumping, but I don't think it was making an effort to be in that ambiguous.
I get it, but I wanted something that was more surprising, something that subverted my expectations a little bit more. You know, I think that's all it is. Everything kind of unfolds due to happenstance. You know, Jeffrey's plane crash, the misunderstanding after crossing the desert. It just felt very like, oh, I wanted to like punch the screen the way it happened. And it made me angry the way it all unfolded. And it tainted my experience to a degree because of that. I know my rating's kind of harsh. I mean, I didn't not like this movie, but I wasn't really like this movie. It's really, you really have to hang your hat on that romance between Ralph Fiennes and Kristin Scott Thomas. And I did not like the Amalshi character, I guess. If you don't love the characters, if you don't love really spending time with them, it hurts your experience a little bit.
And I don't know what this says about like me, but Al Mashi, man, I love that dude. I'd be his friend. If I was in the desert with those people, he would not find me annoying. If I was in a car ride with Al Mashi for like 8 hours, he would respect the fact that I didn't talk that much. And I think we'd find a friendship, but that's
just so funny.
I'm not trying to downplay your opinion. I see him and I relate to his, when he says like, someone was driving me to once go see a fire. He didn't talk for 9 hours. And then he said, fire. That was a good day. I was like, yeah, you're the man. That's just me. It's just me. Yeah.
But I'll say it again. I really got into the romance between Kippen and Hannah. I could watch a whole movie about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
so much chemistry.
And my final thought is, man, after watching this whole series of movies, I need to up my wardrobe, get some nice white linen.
Woo, get some Jod purse.
I gotta go somewhere. I don't know, Banana Republic. Where do you get this stuff? I don't know. But
I'm in the same boat because I like wear the same stupid ass plaid shirt like all the time. And I look like a young like Paul Giamatti from Sideways. Like, I'm just trying to write my script, and I just you know, and I'm like, I want to be cool, Sam Cole. Like, oh no, here comes this like frumpy like pig, you know. So I'm gonna improve.
Yeah. Don't look like that.
So ultimately,
I think I'm in
the minority, but I'm not voting for this to go in the vault.
Mm.
But yeah,
okay.
But that's just me.
All right.
We're going to go to B.
Sure. Yeah. I also had a hard time with the ending of this movie, actually. I don't know what it was. It's not that we haven't spent enough time with Binoche and Fiennes at this point to really like feel the impact of Laszlo's decision here, but something about it just didn't gut punch me. Like I said, something about the bifurcated storytelling. I don't know what it was. I wasn't as swept away as I wanted to be. It wasn't as gut punch as The End of Atonement, but I don't think that negated the rest of the movie for me. I think if anything, that's probably just a product of like the desert, just how I felt when I was watching it this time around. I can't wait to rewatch this movie for sure. And I thought about this section because I knew it'd come up. And I thought about how, God, I'm just going to look like such an easy grader because this apparently is a genre that I did not know ticked all of my boxes. But I am so into this. And then I just thought like, you know, what am I saying no to? If I'm stuck in a nuclear fallout bunkers with you people, all the epic romance movies that I can get, please. Why am I saying no? It's just more good movies. It doesn't have to meet a certain bar. Like, this was a good movie. I enjoyed it just as much as I enjoyed Atonement, although for different reasons. I say save it. At some point, I'm going to be like, we need a movie with Ralph Fiennes being absolutely fine and then absolutely burnt to a crisp in this crazy makeup. So I'm happy to keep it. I'm happy to watch it again. And maybe I'll come around to the ending after the world ends. Who knows? Color my perspective of it. Don't worry, my easy grading will go by the wayside once we get to Nolan.
All right. All right. We are on to Ellie.
So for me, this movie, I'm a hopeless romantic, and I love anything romance. And if
apparently
it's done,
so do I.
If it's done well, if it's well done, I'm going to want to watch again. And this is, I want to say, might be maybe the third time I've seen this film. And every time I watch the film, I always enjoy it. I don't feel bored with it. I still get the suspense. I still love the characters. Every character gives me something. Everyone. Oh, yeah. Every single character in their own way. Unlike Nathan, who doesn't feel like they bring him in.
No love in my heart.
There's no love in your heart. Unlike Nathan, the characters do pull me in, and I feel for each one of them. And obviously, my favorite character is Juliet because she's such a child
and
woman.
So punk rock when she cuts her own hair.
I'm like, heck yeah, girl. That's something I would do because I'm crazy like that. But this woman lives in this world that shit is going on around her, and she still has really great spirits. And I want to hang out with someone like her that, that's going to give me great spirits. And she has this hope about her, and that, even though she lost her love, she lost her friend, there's hope. And then she falls in love with Kip. What's his name?
Kip.
And just the way she comes to him to show him that she's interested in him. I thought, she's such a child. That's something I would do. Because if I like somebody, I'm not going to say I like you. I'm just going to do stupid shit. oh my God. Like, I don't know, maybe bump myself into a freaking pole too. But I've done it before. So I loved it. And I will watch it again. So yeah, it's going in the vault.
Woo! Awesome. Team vault. Yay! All right, Sam, it's up to you.
All the suspense.
as much as I enjoyed this film, I don't know. Of course, I'd put it in the.
Oh my God! I was gonna throw these over the screen.
I mean, like, of course I put it in the vault. I gave it 5 stars. Like, if I didn't put it in the vault, then my name is not Sam Cole. I'd be untrue to myself. Just like Conan O'Brien, I am a repressed British woman in a man's body. So, in the vault it goes.
I can't wait until we heat our popcorn up with radioactive waves and we crack open The English Patient. We watch this again and again and again.
Nate, they'll be sitting there like,
I can't wait.
Conan O'Brien is actually Irish, so my apologies, Conan. But since you made that, it's a joke. I'm being
whatever.
Funny man, Sam.
They lump us all in with the South. It's the same.
Well, there you have it.
There we go. Yeah,
that's a wrap on The English Patient.
That is, and that's a wrap on our
sound effect. I love the finality of that radio.
That little voice at the end. That's Nathan. Going like another feeling.
It's fine. It's open door policy with all movies.
It's fine.
That's our show. But I want to just have a moment here to just talk to Ellie for a moment, because this is the end of you as a full-time host on Back to the Frame, right? And you've been here since day one. We've done this is our 58th episode. That's something.
Crazy?
I know. And we've been doing this for almost year, 14 months or so. Yeah. So over a year. So I don't know. I mean, I just wanted to just to give you an opportunity. If there's anything you want, any parting wisdom or anything you want to say to our audience, all two of them.
Yeah, run. No, I'm just kidding. Run.
It was great working with Sam Coyle. He's so awesome. He's so nice.
Ellie, it's crazy how you can throw your voice like that.
Oh, yeah, I have many talents. One of them is changing my voice. So thank you, Nathan, for giving me the floor. So, yeah, so I actually been struggling with this decision because I love the podcast and I love films and I love dissecting every film and, you know, sometimes putting the film down and crashing it down to the ground because I don't like him, like Noir or November. Never forget Noir November, or always for that matter.
Richard Dreyfuss, and I just want to say I forgive you because you're a talented actress and I, you know, and always, let's face it, it had its problems. Anyway, sorry to interrupt. Keep going.
Although I have to say, I do love The Fisher King. And I know that's your movie that you picked, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I actually like that movie. So not bad at all. But yeah, so I've been struggling with this decision. And for a few weeks now, I kept telling my son, yeah, I'm going to tell them this Monday is going to be my last Monday. And every time I end the podcast, Carlos would be like, did you tell them? No. What are you going to tell them? I'm like, I can't. I don't know. I just don't know. And I finally brought myself I had a little push from the universe. As it so happened, the universe comes knocking at my door and always guides me to make the fine decisions in my life. And I trust that completely. I'm a big believer in that. You have to listen to, talk about wisdom words. You have to listen to your instinct. Never deny your instincts. If you feel a certain way, go with it. And I think we as humans have a tendency to always put a guilt, a pressure on ourselves for every decision that we make. And we forget that more importantly than that guilt or feeling like you're making the wrong decision is, yes, listening to those instincts, follow those instincts, because that's what's going to lead you to where you need to go. And about 6 years ago, that's exactly what I did. And that's when I started my acting career after my car crash and left me with no freaking car and a concussion. I basically listened to the universe and my instincts and had I not done that, I wouldn't be where I am today. And I've been very lucky, blessed, I guess, want to say, with all the film opportunities that I've gotten in the past 6 years, not just here in New England, but in California and in New York as well. And very grateful that I was able to get an agent right away, because I know that there are other actors that for years have been trying to get an agent and they have not been able to. So I think for some reason I'm in the right place. And every day I am always working really hard as an actor, training in classes, every day submitting, auditioning, because I have, you know, what's the end goal for any actor? If it's fame and fortune, might as well just give up. But if it's to tell meaningful stories and leave a legacy of the stories that you told to the world and that might make a change for someone listening or watching you, then yeah, that's the only reason. And that's my end goal for me working so hard. And because I'm so in tune with my acting and other things that I want to do, I had to make this decision to kind of take something out of my plate, right? And unfortunately, this is the one thing that I'm going to have to take out of the plate as a full-time, like Nathan says, right? Because I still want to be, if you need me as a guest host, to come in and do something with you guys. So this is not the end. Yes. This is not the end. This is just me just focusing on things that align with what I want to do. And I think it's okay. And I think people need to remember, if they're listening to this podcast, that it is okay to, if you're doing something for a while and you've reached that moment where something is not aligning with your purpose, that it's okay to say, I can leave it here. I've done really well. I've done everything that I could, but I want to do this now. And that is okay. Give yourself permission to do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But my takeaway from this whole year and some months of being in this podcast, you guys, other than being really funny, it's, you guys are tremendously fun to hang out with. You've put up with my silliness, my chitty cheeses, my cheesy cheetos, you know, speeches. And I even cried in this podcast. Like I heard the Notebook podcast. I'm like, oh my God, I totally cried. And I appreciate each and every one of you. And, you know, from the get-go, it was just Nathan and I and Sam and I, but then B came in and you fit so well with our group. And I thought it was like, it felt good to have another female.
I'm going to miss you, girl.
In the group, because I'm like, you know, like there's two guys, but are they ever going to understand another female?
It's
going to
be the Mojo Dojo Casa House.
I'm just kidding.
And so my takeaway from the group and this project is that aside the films that we discuss is the friendship that I built with you guys. And I think that's my biggest takeaway from here, because sometimes the project is not, it might be everything for Nathan, but you know, like for me, the project was great, but more importantly was the friendships, the trust that was built in this circle with you guys. Mm-hmm. And if anyone that comes to do this guest or this project with you guys it's full of surprises and fun times. So you're not going to be disappointed. I am. It's bittersweet, right? Because I love this, but I have to do what I have to do for continue, you know, I need to grow more in my career in acting. And that's what I'm focusing on right now. So.
Yeah. And I will always be your friend, Ellie, as long as you give me chicken McNuggets once in a while.
Dude, we can go and eat chicken McNuggets together because it's one of my favorite things to eat other than
absolutely.
Cake.
Yeah.
But cake is first.
I'll be your friend anyway, even if there's no chicken McNuggets, more like, grudgingly, but I'll still be your friend.
I'm like waiting for my going away cake party here. Where's my freaking cake? Isn't that what people do?
I'm sorry, we didn't really have time to like wrangle like the party. We're going to have to do that.
We are going to need a party another day.
Nathan, I have to tell you something. Remember
I failed in this department completely.
I totally did.
I have hired an avatar Roger Moore stripper and pole dancer for you.
Oh my God, you're going to torture her.
This all like kind of all happened within the last 48 hours. Everyone has to understand. So it really wasn't,
no,
you know,
it's true.
I thought about putting together a clip show. I thought about so many things that we could do here, but I was like, I don't have time to do
it. Happened really, really quickly. And I think that if I had not done this when I did, Nathan, when we talked on Saturday, still be 2 months from now, Carlos will still be asking, did you tell him? Did you tell him? I'm like, no, I didn't. So it wasn't like an easy decision for me. Don't think it was. Mm-hmm. It wasn't. I've been struggling with the parting part. But now that it's here, I'm glad that I gave myself permission to finally do it. And as much as I love you guys, because I do, and I love the podcast, I don't think it's being selfish, but it's more like I need to grow more in my acting and see where it goes. And then I'm here if you need me to come back to do a guest appearance. I'm here whenever you need me. So you're not getting rid of me completely. So, but I do want to say, Nathan, twice we went to eat at that restaurant. What's the name of that restaurant?
Oh, it's Citizen Crust.
Yeah, Citizen Crust.
Foxborough.
That's the place where I actually tried the corn thing that you ordered the first time.
Oh, lovely.
Sweet corn.
Yeah.
I now make it myself at home.
Ooh. It's so good.
And so I make corn and I'm like, this kind of tastes like the one in the crust, but maybe it's missing another ingredient, but it's similar. It's got my own Latino salsa in there. But anyway, so I've been making those. So I wish you all the best I'm obviously going to be listening to the podcast because I'm a fan. I'm a dire fan. I'm a dire fan of the podcast.
Side note, we cannot talk about her behind.
No, because I will be listening.
You'll be listening.
And you know what? If you put a movie in that vault that I don't approve of, I will comment on it. I will tell you guys.
I hope you continue to comment on us.
That'd no, of course I will. Yeah. but yeah, so I am very grateful, Nathan, that you thought of me and brought me into the podcast from the very get-go. I've learned a lot about podcasting, what to do and what not to do technically. But yeah, so.
I have no regrets, Ellie. This has been a wonderful ride. I have had getting to know you over the last 14 months, because, you know, even before this, you know, we were friends on Facebook. You know, I think you worked a couple of days on my movie.
I totally did.
Years and years ago. But, you know, we really didn't know each other that well because you were one of like 50 people in a room.
I was one of the 50 people in the club dancing. Yeah,
exactly. But, you know, it's been so great hearing your stories about your family and your life and all the things going on in your life. You've been so open and transparent about things going on. And it's been wonderful. And I've learned a lot from you. I appreciate everything that you have brought to the show.
Oh, and Ellie, you really are a great actress, and I hope to have the opportunity to work with you one day, for real. Yeah.
I cannot wait to work with you, Sam, because I've seen some of your work. So yes, absolutely. Yeah. Look forward to that. And Nathan, you got to keep making a film, man.
There is something cooking. I cannot talk about it yet. There is something that I am working on, a super secret project that might come together before the end of 2024. We'll see.
Yeah, don't talk about it because that's how you shinx it. So don't.
Oh yeah, the last time I went all in on something and I talked a lot about it, it all fell apart. So this is
zip it. We don't want to know until it's done.
Ellie, we're gonna miss you.
Oh, me too. Voice. It was such a pleasure to get to know you as well. And 100%. I'm absolutely like, honestly, it takes my breath away that you can pilot a plane. Oh my god, I would be so afraid. Yeah. But that's brave. And
well, you can star in TV, so we're both very brave.
The great thing is we have 75 hours of Ellie talking, so I can just take the AI version of her to review movies going forward.
Excuse me?
That would be against the authenticity of the show. So we just have to bring her back.
I'm gonna get you for that, Nathan.
He's only gonna use one AI sentence every single response.
Nathan, you can try to replicate the, you know, the AI of me, but you're never gonna get the cheesy Cheetos in there.
Good for you. That's right.
Cheesy Cheetos. I've already got it recorded.
That's another Letterbox list right there. Cheesy Cheetos. Cheesy Cheetos.
Okay. Oh, wow. Well, thank you, Ellie, so much. Yeah, it's been so wonderful having you. You will be back.
Yes,
we'll be back
for
future guest spots. So this is not the end.
No, it's not.
Okay. Well, so the last thing I want to say, because before we wrap up, we are going to be going into a new retrospective for April. This is pretty exciting because, you know, off of the big win for Oppenheimer, we decided that we are going to go into a Christopher Nolan retrospective. Woo! And we each picked a movie that we are going to, that we wanted to review. Sam, you chose Insomnia. Mm-hmm. B, you picked Prestige. And I picked Following. I've actually never seen Following. Has anyone here seen Following?
I have. Nope. I've seen Following.
You're the only one.
I am. And I freaking love Nolan. And I've seen that. It's in the Criterion channel, I think. Following,
we're going to start off with them. And actually, it's on Mubi. It's on Mubi and Tubi, and it's available on VOD. So
you're going to like it. You're going to like it.
And we had to pick a wild card, we're going to keep it all in the early part of Nolan's career. So we're going to also do Memento. So we're doing the first well, I was about to say the first four movies, but we're not doing any of the Batman movies. So we're skipping over the first Batman movie in, so outside of the Batman movies, we're doing the first four in his oeuvre, I guess you could say. Following Memento, Insomnia, and The Prestige. So I'm really excited about this, which opens the door maybe at another time way down the road, we might do the back end of his career because there's another four movies or so that we might review someday. Who knows?
It's an interesting career.
Yeah. So tune in next week where we'll be discussing, I think it's 1998 or 99. I forget. Following his first film. So
1998.
All right. All right, that is our show this week. Back to the Frame Rate is part of the Westin Media Podcast Network. We also wish to thank Brian Ellsworth for our show opening. On behalf of all of us, we bid you farewell from the fallout shelter. Your presence in our underground sanctuary is truly appreciated. We are truly sorry you cannot join us, but we want to express our gratitude for your company. If you're finding solace in our discussions, we've kindly asked you to please subscribe and leave a rating and review. Your support is the beacon of light that brightens our confined space. Head on over to Apple Podcasts or iTunes, Spotify, or whichever portal connects you to our broadcast. And share your thoughts. Until we emerge from the fallout, stay with us, keep hope alive, and keep those reviews coming. This is the end of our transmission. Back to the Frame Rate.
Pum, pum, pum.
Signing off. Macarena?
I want you to know it's over.
Well.
Well.
Bye.
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 Damn it.
That was so sad.
You guys set off.